John McEwen, welcome to In the Tradition.
Hey, like I said to my mom, thanks for having me.
Exactly. You're going to be in the area this weekend for a couple of shows at McCool's in Quakertown on Saturday and a workshop at the Lesson Center on Friday evening.
That's going to be fun, both of them.
They will be fun. The show down at McCool's is going to be broken into a matinee show for kids. And then anybody
that wants to come. It won't be kids' music. It'll be targeting. I've raised six kids, and I've played at all their schools as they were growing up. And
yeah.
I love to play the kids. But if their parents will be with them, so there'll be something for them, too.
Exactly. It's early enough in the day that they can get there and still be somewhat alert as well. And then a 7:30 show in the evening at McCool's as
well.
Boy,
I'm looking forward to that. It's a great-looking room.
It is. I have never been there, but I understand it's a great place to play. But then on Friday night, you're going to be doing a workshop at the Lesson Center in Bethlehem, Friday from 6:30 to 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we expect in that workshop?
Well, the workshop, I like to cover what the music business has been like with some background information. And that will lead into recording certain songs and how they were done and tips on how to record various acoustic instruments and play them. I focus mainly on guitar in an unusual tuning and five-string banjo in different styles, and also incorporate, for those that are live players, ways to make your sound better when you play live and avoid feedback, and how to mic your instruments, and how to treat monitors. And then get into what film scoring music is about. I've been very lucky. I've had about 15 good scoring jobs, and got an Emmy nomination for one for National Geographic Society. And using acoustic instrumentation and talking about the effects of how scoring can affect a certain scene. I like to give an example of one type of music for a scene and then say, well, what if it was this type of music, and telling people how to feel and think about what's coming up. And then do questions. Any questions are open territory, whether it's about how did the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band start in 1966 and
right.
what kept it going until now,
right.
to how did you find songs, or who did that? What is that strange process that happens that puts people on the radio?
Yeah, exactly. You know, folks always want to know about that stuff. That's the kind of stuff I really love to hear about.
Yeah, the workshop has to be at least 2 hours to cover a lot of different things.
Yeah, for sure. Is it a multimedia thing? Are you going to bring some of the some clips of the films you did?
Not for the workshop, and no, it's not.
Okay,
but,
just curious.
I do cover talking about them and playing some of the various music and giving people pointers on how to maybe further their career or different ways to make money with music, because that's a very difficult pursuit.
Tell me about it. It is tough.
You know,
it is tough.
Like the kid said to his mother, Mommy, I want to be a guitar player when I grow up. And the mother said, well, you can't do both.
Exactly.
And that's possible. But you need to know about what publishing is and what BMI and ASCAP mean. And part of what I explain is why somebody in a band might not do a $15,000 date for one 20-minute show, because they don't want to come home after 3 days with $200.
Right.
And that is a mystery to some people about how is that possible.
Exactly.
Well, we get into that.
Exactly.
And how to avoid it.
I mean, and you're a real good example of that you've been able to do this full-time since 1966 and maybe even before that, and survive doing music only. It must have been some lean times along the way.
Well, I don't know about lean. Yeah, there have been some, but that was usually connected to a divorce.
If we can avoid that, we'd be a lot better off.
And having six kids to take care of along the way.
Yeah, exactly.
But I've always been fortunate to be one of those. I often say I'm one of the luckiest people I know. I get to play guitar and banjo and mandolin and fiddle. That's what I'm bringing to the McCool show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what I do. And other applications of that. I have my own show on XM Radio that's in its seventh year, syndicatednews.net. That's .net. Syndicatednews.net is a website I'm developing. But that wouldn't be possible if I hadn't had the music
right.
background happening.
If you hadn't stuck it out.
I asked Earl Scruggs if he'd record with the Dirt Band in 1971, and he said yes. And a week later, I asked Doc Watson, and he said yes. And that ended up becoming the Circle Be Unbroken album.
Exactly. Now, that's something I'd like to talk to you about, because leading into this program tonight, we're going to play you and Earl playing Soldier's Joy from the Circle album with you playing Uncle Dave Macon's banjo. I have to admit, in 1972, you taught me who Uncle Dave Macon was, because I didn't know who he was. When I bought that recording in 1972, took quite a bit of cash for a very poor college student, but we just played the grooves off it and learned so much about all these wonderful artists that we had never really, really investigated before. But I didn't know who Uncle Dave was.
I had so many people asking us, because when Mr. Bojangles was a big hit,
along with
a couple other songs, some of Shelley's Blues and House of Pooh Corner were all hits in 1971, and we were out playing every college, and there were so many people saying, where'd you learn to play the banjo like that? and I'd say, you ever heard of Earl Scruggs? No, who's that? Are they people listening to us hadn't heard of Doc Watson or Merle Travis or Maybelle Carter? And, you know, so it was putting them together in our frame became a quest of something that was the purpose of that record was to expose those people to a different audience.
And you did a great job. I heard a story once. I was talking to Norman Blake, and he said that you offered Bill Monroe the opportunity to be on that recording.
And well, Bill Monroe...
Did Bill turn you down?
A good way to describe Bill Monroe is he felt like everyone had a right to his opinion. And he had his opinion, and he let you know it.
Yeah.
Like when he said somebody asked him what he thought about electric guitar, and he said, that ain't no part of nothing. you know, Bill Monroe was focused on what he did, which was fine, because we wouldn't have had bluegrass if it hadn't been for him.
Sure.
I should say hadn't been for him hiring Earl Scruggs at one point,
too. Yes, that's what I've always said.
I would say about 5 years after the Circle album, I was opening for Mr. Monroe, and he came up to me after the show and said, hey, John, if you're ever going to do another one of them Circle albums, give me a call. Now, we were on pop radio charts.
Yeah.
And to him, he didn't know what the music was. He just knew we were on the same chart as the Doors and whoever, you know. People like
Jefferson Starship
and Nash,
stuff,
rock and roll, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't know that our songs had mandolin, banjo, and acoustic guitars and accordion.
Right.
You know, Bill Monroe's early band had accordion in it.
It did.
So when he finally heard some of our music, and when Jimmy Martin got so much notice from that album, and Vassar Clements, people he'd worked with, all of a sudden, these sidemen were getting a lot of notice. He kind of went, you know, I'd like to be on that next one.
I always figured that's why Jimmy Martin did it, because Bill didn't.
Well, the magic of why those people were so, it wasn't, I got to be the vehicle to ask Earl and Doc, and then we got Louise Scruggs to ask Jimmy Martin, my brother and I, as we put the album together, and my brother went after Merle Travis. But, you know, I'd studied Jimmy Martin's records. I had every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But one reason that there was an audience for me to be able to do that is because of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. I was, if I had just been some kid from Orange County, which I was, playing the banjo, and said, you want to record, or can I record with you, it would have been a different story. But the children of Earl and Doc, Merle Watson, and Jimmy Martin's son, Ray, and Merle Travis, we'd worked with before, so he saw us as a jug band in 66. We played 10 days with him at an L.A. club and got along great. So it was the kids saying, hey, Daddy, listen to this new band. So they liked it. And so when the subject came up of you could record with them, it was kind of like when my kids said to me, Dad, you ought to go see this band called Fish.
Yeah.
And I kind of went, no, I don't know, another band. And when I finally saw Fish, I was blown away. Then I ended up being on one of their albums.
Yeah. Isn't it great?
And it was because of my kids I got exposed to Fish.
Sure. Sure. Now, one of the things about the Dirt Band that's been so great over the years is you've pretty much kept the same personnel. I mean, you and Jimmy Fadden and Jeff Hanna are pretty much the core of the band, and you've pretty much stayed together except for that couple of years that you sort of went on hiatus.
I went on an hiatus.
Hiatus.
I didn't really hiatus, but I was raising my kids and doing solo shows and doing different things. I like to record. I like to make things. And the band's pace was divergent from where I thought we should go. They wanted to quit recording instrumentals that I was coming up with. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, put it this way, in the time that I was away from the band, I made four of my own albums, CDs. I wouldn't have made the String Wizards album if I'd been in the group. It wouldn't have been time. I made another six CDs with other people. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, one CD that I put out last year called the Martha Redbone Garden of Love, I produced and wrote music with her for the words of William Blake. It's nominated for an Independent Record Award this year. So in a combination of things led me to stray away from the band, but when I reissued the Circle album for the 30th anniversary in 2001, mm-hmm. I have been back with the group since then.
That's great. Now, you play with your sons, Nathan and Jonathan.
Yes, sir.
What does Nathan play?
Nathan, well, both of them play whatever they need to play.
Don't you love it? Take after their father.
I don't know. Jonathan's a better bass player than I am, and Nathan's a better rhythm guitarist than I am, and they're both better singers than I am. And it's a very non-competitive situation. When we made an album called The McEwen Sessions, one of the finer albums that I've made, I told them, I said, look, I want all the basic tracks to be first take and the vocals to be first take. And they were. Mm-hmm. That's what Roy Acuff told us at the Circle album. Mm-hmm. Boys, get it right the first time, and the hell with the rest of them, because every time you do it again, you lose a little something.
Well, you suggested a track that we should listen to that features your son, Jonathan. What is this track we're going to hear?
Well, Jonathan came up to me one day years ago and said, Dad, let's do a fast bluegrass song. Just start playing in A and just on one chord, and I'll start singing, and you'll get it. And so the song ended up being a Prince song, the one Kiss, called Kiss. And I thought I'd give you an example of some of the fun I like to have with music with my sons. And it's Jonathan singing and playing guitar, and I'm playing banjo, and I got a five-piece band back of me. It was recorded live in Los Angeles. I like to record live or first take. Mm-hmm. For instance, on that String Wizards album that you're familiar with, mm-hmm. eight of those songs were first take songs. And I think that's important, because recording live is really fun because you're not going to do it again and again and again. Right. The people believe.
Spontaneity is there. Well, let's listen to Kiss. This is from which recording? Live with the LA String Wizards.
I shouldn't have given it away. This is from an album I call Round Trip, which refers to my life and my work. I fly places and then I fly back.
Okay, well, let's listen to it. This is Jonathan McEwen, along with his father, John McEwen.
Just need your phone, baby.
Well, you know, that is a Prince tune. I don't know if any of you guys caught that out there. John gave you a hint as we were announcing it, but it's pretty wild to think that you would use a Prince tune for a bluegrass tune. I love it. I love
that
kind of stuff.
Well, you know, there's an influence that comes from my early music. I used to listen to the Country Gentlemen,
sure.
You know, with John Duffy and mm-hmm. and the original guys, and mm-hmm. they did weird songs.
Mm-hmm.
They did Sing Like a Girl or Sing Like a Frog, or and they did funny stuff, entertaining music. It's fun to do on stage.
Yeah, the Greenbrier Boys did that kind of stuff, too. They did things you wouldn't expect to be bluegrass tunes, stuff
yeah.
like that. You won a Grammy for Steve Martin's Crow recording. You've known Steve for a very long time, haven't you?
Well, we met in our senior year of high school. We worked in Disneyland as teenagers for several years in the magic shop, and that meant we were doing magic tricks all day long.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the most fun jobs you could have at 18 or 19 years old.
I'll bet you.
And I used to complain if I only got a 10 or 12-hour day. Come on, let me stay longer. And in fact, one week I worked 92 hours.
Ooh, baby. I worked at an amusement park when I was about that age, and I was happy to go home at the end of the day. It wasn't nearly as much fun. But did you guys learn to play the banjo at about the same time, or did you teach him a little bit? Or who taught you how to play, and who taught John? Or who taught Steve how to play?
Well, we both got a lot out of the Pete Seeger book, How to Play the Five-String
yes.
Banjo.
You didn't cut the neck off your banjo and make it longer, did you?
No.
Okay, good. You tore that page out.
My brother had a friend over that knew about five songs on the banjo, like Jesse James and Ballad of Jed Clampett, kind of stumbling through, but mm-hmm. I'd never seen it, and Steve had never seen it up close live before. And I remember that being somewhere around 64 or something, where Steve said to the guy, he happened to own a music store, and Steve said, how much is a good, used, cheap banjo anyway? And he ended up buying the banjo the guy was playing and plays it to this day along with a couple others.
He's got some pretty shiny banjos.
Pardon?
He's got some pretty shiny banjos.
Now he can afford better banjos, yeah.
Yeah, 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 they're really...
But we started playing, I was able to figure things out a little quicker, and I'd show him things, and he'd get half of it and then go off on his own. He's been kind enough to say that I don't know how he puts it. I don't like to say I taught him how to play because he had his own personal drive.
Sure.
Took influences. And when the Crow album came around, he had me come over to his place to listen to some of his banjo tunes and said, what do you think? I said, I think you need to make a whole album of mm-hmm. just your music. You've got a fantastic collection. Well, I don't have enough for an album. I said, write a couple more. Mm-hmm. And he did. Because I didn't think he should do another version of Little Maggie or something.
There's no reason for that.
Keep it your own.
Sure.
And I produced the album, and I won a Grammy. And I got to play guitar and bass. And I did some bass overdubs, but we had a great bass player. And got Dolly Parton and Vince Gill to sing one song, and Tim O'Brien sang Daddy Played the Banjo, and it was just a really fun project.
That's great. We're talking to John McEwen, actually. I haven't mentioned that for a while. He's going to be in the area this weekend at McCool's in Quakertown on Saturday night for two shows, one at 4 o'clock and one at 7:30. And also Friday night, he'll be at the Lesson Center on Broad Street in Bethlehem with a workshop from 6:30 until 8:30 to tell you all about how to stay in the music business, get in the music business, and he's going to tell you all the stories of the nitty-gritty dirt band that he can tell. It's going to be a fun night.
Well, along with some tips on playing the instruments and recording various acoustic instruments and the process of doing a session, that's all covered in the workshop. Yeah. I really like doing workshops. I've done them for years.
That's fun. I do them in West Virginia at Augusta, the Heritage Folk Workshops, and it's just so much fun to impart knowledge to folks who are so interested. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
So what's next for you? What are you up to at the moment?
At the moment, I'm getting ready to go to McCool's and for that workshop. And at the moment, kind of outlining what's coming up for this year, which is various dirt, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band shows, mm-hmm. as well as some solo performances.
You guys pretty much play on the weekends, and you go out on the weekends as well when the dirt band's not working, or how does that work?
It's a very difficult process. That's why I'm really glad to have the show in Quakertown, because it's a perfect room, and I was able to sandwich it between some other dirt band shows.
Terrific.
We do anywhere from 75 to 90 shows a year,
mm-hmm.
and they're not always weekends. In fact, we have some Tuesdays and Wednesdays coming up.
Okay, sounds good.
And sometimes I get a date. I took a date on a Tuesday in August that I had to move to the Wednesday because the band got one on the Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
So it works out.
And you live in Florida. Where does the rest of the band live?
Well, one guy lives in Florida, one in Nashville, one in L.A.,
okay.
And we usually rehearse on the plane, but we're on different planes.
The beauty of Skype. But you guys, you know, I thought maybe somebody would still be in Colorado, but I guess not, huh?
Well, Colorado was great for many years, but it played out,
yeah,
you might say.
I can understand that. Well, John, thank you for calling in, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Again, I want to remind everybody that you're going to be doing two concerts at McCool's in Quakertown. That's a 4 o'clock show. That's kind of a kid's show, but not really. Bring the parents along as well. And then a 7:30 show in the evening. And on Friday night, he'll be at the Lesson Center at 6 East Broad Street in Bethlehem for a great workshop from 6:30 until 8:30.
And, yeah, they're all going to be fun. I couldn't do it if it wasn't. It takes a lot of work to get there, you know?
It does. It really does.
I always make fun of somebody that comes in late and say, "Oh, I came from 1,500 miles away. What's your excuse for being late?" "Oh, you live 20 miles away. Okay."
Right. Well, John, thank you so much, and I hope you have a great time this weekend.
I'm looking forward to it, because this is the kind of room. That McCool's thing is well-named. It's very cool. I've talked to somebody that's played there, and I've looked at it on the website. It's like a perfect concert room in an area where people appreciate acoustic music.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to McCool's. If you're thinking of going, I'd say get a ticket early.
I would say so, too.
And bring some requests, and I'll try and do them.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, John.
Okay, well, thank you, Tom.